This is the Urban Political,
the podcast on urban theory, research, and activism.
Welcome, Viola and Christian. Thanks for joining us today in our episode on post-growth planning. And to begin, I'd like to ask you to briefly introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name is Viola Schulze-Dieckhoff. I'm a research assistant at the Faculty of Spatial Planning at TU Dortmund, at the Department of Spatial Planning and Planning Theory. But further, I'm also a freelancer and in the field of transformative action and research, and I work with associations such as the Urbanisten from Dortmund and the Wall and Space Association that focuses on transforming European cities with urban arts. But yeah, after 2 years of parental leave, my my first week of works at TU Dortmund started again last week, but it was very odd because I said hello to all my colleagues after 2 years via email. And yeah, of course, I'm very glad to be back at uni because all my freelancing work was cut off due to Corona. And now I'm in a situation where I work with two kids in the age of 2 and 5 at home in the home office. And yeah, because there's a lockdown from the 22nd of March until now in Germany. And yeah, our kids, we can't go to the playgrounds. We can't really go outside. We are okay as a family. But yes, that's the situation we're at. So it's work, it's kids, and it's all in private rooms mainly organized. And yeah, that's my background, my situation currently.
In the Department of Spatial Planning and Environment there, working on roles in planning, on post-growth planning, on regional perspectives, and on leadership in sustainable transformations. Usually I would be in Groningen teaching, working there. Now I'm in Germany near Heidelberg with my girlfriend. Since five weeks now, came back with students from with an excursion from Belgrade on the 15th of March. The day after the whole university shut down, I was not in my office since then. And the universities through online learning, online teaching, online education, basically over just a weekend in mid-March. And we assume to get back to regular teaching with having students at university in September. So it's a weird situation working in the Netherlands, now being in Germany, sitting in the kitchen here and talking to you. But it's also impressive to see how this all works.
So we're going to talk about the Corona situation in a bit in greater detail. The topic of our discussion today is post-growth planning as a perspective, as an approach. And I would like you to talk us through what is peculiar about this field or this approach.
Yeah, we came up with a very short definition a couple of months ago. So for very brief terms, post-growth planning is a planning in which growth is neither a necessary starting point nor a goal that must be achieved. So thereby a planning of spaces that does work on change but not on growth. So a planning that works on the quality of life but not with more of the same growth solutions, and one in which planners engage and motivate. So that's a rather broad definition or starting point to think about post-growth and planning, because there is not such an established field of post-growth planning, but there's a number of different perspectives on post-growth available, most prominently from economy. You may know Kate Raworth's Donut Economy, Tim Jackson's famous book on prosperity without growth, and the strong international degrowth movement. But there are also great ideas from sociology, for example, Hartmut Rosa's work on resonance and acceleration and time, and from psychology. In Germany, Hartmut Belzer, older works internationally from Erich Fromm and others, especially focusing on the inner questions.
Yeah, I think what Christian, he gave us this brief definition of what we understand as post-growth planning. And then he pointed out that there's provenant endeavors from different fields of research, like from economy and psychology and psychology, where research and activism is quite strong on degrowth and on post-growth. So 2016, we sat together with some spatial planners and we were discussing about why there's not such a big scene, not research, no activism in the field of spatial planning in regards to post-growth or degrowth. So starting in these days, we try to do some activities with other researchers to talk about what can degrowth and post-growth theory mean to spatial planning. And since then, we did a lot of presentations, networking on different levels in Germany, like the Akademie für Raumentwicklung der Leibniz Gemeinschaft, and for example with the TU Weimar that work on the post-growth city, and some other initiatives and people from Holland or Portugal. And we try to figure out what can post-growth theory and action mean to spatial planning, and we came around with six propositions of post-growth planning. So our propositions were, it's first, post-growth planning needs new criteria for success as a basis for action. The second is post-growth planning means just and democratic decisions. Third, post-growth planning triggers major transformations through small-scale interventions. Fourth, post-growth planning needs experimental and artistic actions. And fifth, post-growth planning must learn from failures, and post-growth planners are all of us. So this is post-growth planning and the key ideas for Christian and me, and like some people that work with us in the collective of post-growth planning.
I had a follow-up question. Just in general terms, how would you situate post-growth planning politically as a political project? Is it anti-capitalist? Is it radical? Is it reformist? I mean, you touched on a few ideas there, talking about small steps leading to bigger changes. How would you characterize the politics of this movement or this academic literature?
Like we always said, we are engaging for a planning which is growth independent. And that's probably the most important for us. So growth independent for planning not just means not just planning for big companies and they're like not just for capitalism, but also it means that big cities don't shouldn't just plan for more people that live there, for more infrastructure, regardless of the quality. So I'm not sure, we always try to avoid go into like a direct, like one political directions. Like we get lots of questions asked by the left probably, for example. But for us, it's important that it's just growth independent. This is why we use the word post-growth and not degrowth. So that's also why you asked the question later whether it's a degrowth situation right now. But for us, it's more like an active. It's not a degrowth situation that we would like to have because it's very cruel and not a political agenda what we have now. For us, it's more like an active. Freeing ourselves as a planner to just work for more and more and more in cities and regardless the quality that you have that comes with a more and more.
Yeah, and we especially look from within planning. So we are both spatial planners. So we are not thinking about radical alternative social or economic models, but we are thinking about how to reform planning, because we think there's lots of potential, there's lots of things that could be different, and we are looking for what does this post-growth perspective deliver us to change planning, to reform planning. It might lead to a very different planning, But we also think, especially if you think to today's crisis, like the Corona crisis, that there is a need to connect to urgent actions and not only about delivering a very radical alternative, because there is always losers and change, and we find it difficult to think about a model to put forward without thinking to the losers that it might produce.
You, when describing post-growth planning, you were primarily referring to academics or authors. Is there also a particular case, an exemplary case that you would point to say, okay, this showcases post-growth planning in reality?
There is a number. There is a number of smaller niches, smaller in spatial or in time aspects, that show parts of post-growth and show a direction where we all might think together. Part of that is the transition town movement. There are many initiatives around that. There are many urban commons, many different ways how small neighborhoods organize in collectives, in cooperatives, to find different ways to organize their communities and organize also their communal spaces. And that's a starting point to think through how we can find more just and more democratic decisions together.
Could you say a few more words on the transition town movement?
Yeah, transition towns, if you think about the transition towards more sustainable modes of living, towards long-term living within ecological limits, then transition towns are the ones on the forefront trying these new models of living, of working together, usually so far in small communities, really trying to live according to other ideals than economic growth, for example.
Yeah, I was also working on the Chita Slow movement, which is a movement that works for small to medium-sized cities. And it started in Italy, and it translates the criteria of the slow food movements to the development of small and medium-sized cities. And it's also a network that works on the global level, which is quite interesting. And they thought about different criteria for these types of cities to develop in a sustainable way, which is a very interesting agenda, I think. And it's also another example is the Gemeinwohlökonomie from Felber. And there's also one smallish city in Bavaria. It's called Kirchen-Schöring, and I think they also try to do different types of planning and using different type of criteria to develop their spaces. So I think there are a few examples, but it's also like post-growth planning. It's just recently being put on the agenda. Like last year in Germany, there were two big conferences on the agenda to also not just talk about this in a niche. It was more likely to be put onto a mainstream talk, and so the debates just started last year, and this year we were supposed to have so many talks about it, but unfortunately because of Corona some things stopped, and maybe they will be transferred to digital formats. But the discussion also with the mainstream planners is currently there, it's right there. But it's examples of how you implement the whole idea into practice is about to be developed now.
Moving on, how do you think this concept, the beginnings of this movement can help us to understand the COVID situation, particularly in terms of what's happening now, but also thinking in terms of moving forwards and out of the COVID-19 situation?
That's rather challenging because, no one really understands the current situation, nor do we. But as planners and also as people, communities who started to think differently about space, we should talk and we can talk about our observations and also our shared worries and about potential futures that we see now and discuss them together. And also to look on two different times. So one is the time right now, maybe the next weeks, month, a year, where we have restrictions according to Corona, and the second time frame, what will be the long-term future? So we really see how interrelated processes are now, how interwoven they are, and also how much our basic services like water, food, mobility, and local productions are not a given. They are just the work of many and often low-income workers, and especially women in many cases. So the impacts of Corona are unevenly distributed, and we see in very obvious terms how much we all relate upon each other. And first of all, we do not know how the situation develops, but it's our task to discuss potentials and to keep that discussion alive also in spatial terms.
Viola, do you want to add something? Or maybe I can make the question more precise. What do you see as the potentials that Christian spoke about from this post-growth perspective?
I think the great potential of the post-growth perspective is that it gives hope for the current situation, and maybe hope to some people, maybe also. It's because there's this debate about maybe some bit like your podcast that you had before. It's about a group of people that kind of for who the situation is not as hard as to others. So maybe post-growth planning is giving some hope to people that were linked to these kind of ideas anyways, but also maybe to other people who kind of feel some sense in the situation right now, saying, all right, we as a society weren't living sustainable before, so now we have the chance to do it differently, realizing the drastic effects that we have right now and the change in all behavings and all this. So in this very dramatic situation right now, where you also see the injustice in space and in the social spheres that are even getting worse, like when it comes to homeschooling, like you had in the previous discussion, but also in in regards to questions to homeless people and many more people that are on the agenda or maybe aren't even on the agenda because we don't see them in the digital spaces and elsewhere. So post-growth planning can give hope and can give some future direction, but also we have like some major topics right now that we really have to handle. Like also, that's why we also like your idea of talking about post-corona, because now there's different action needed than there is needed action needed in the future. But it's good to start talking about the future right now as well. I think it's also very important, and that's where post-growth planning might give help to direct future actions, like if it's not the financial support that's given right now, but maybe also for future developments in economy, future planning of cities, like how do we have to in the future recognize these kind of challenges and what do they mean, like the distance, the physical distance, by keeping social closeness. This is a very interesting question, but also what kind of density do we want to have, and how can all this affect how people would like to live, but it could go either way. Like right now, we kind of like when we talk about it, it's always like it can go either way. Right now, there's so many different ways that could happen. We don't know how long this whole situation lasts. Like in my surrounding, I can feel like sometimes you're like, okay, this will end soon. And then other days you're like, no, this will go for a long, long time. So it's, post-birth planning can give hope for like in the future going towards a more sustainable way of living regarding climate change. But then I have my brother, he's working in the travel industry, and they just did a very interesting poll on how people would like to travel in the future. And he's the head of Urlaubstracker. And what they discovered that people would love to fly mainly out of Europe as soon as or as quick as possible. And this is the other side of the medal. So where we go in future, it's very hard to say, but it'll be good to keep the climate crisis and other challenges in our heads and try to combine them for future planning directions. Also like SDGs, Paris agreements, there are lots of agreements already made. So if we take action now, we can also rely on these criteria, on these agreements. And I think this would help a lot.
I was wondering if you could clarify how this concept of paradigm deals with the need to generate wealth. I mean, generally, the idea of the economy at the moment is to generate wealth through growth, and that's embraced to a lesser extent or more or less by most of the political parties, even left of center, right of center. And if we think about what will happen as we come out of the COVID situation, you can imagine there's going to be a huge demand for growth, for wealth generation. So to imagine a situation in which that could be transformed into something new, i.e. post-growth, the post-growth city or post-growth economy, what's the argument that you can make about generating enough wealth without growing the city or growing the economy?
Yeah, I think we see quite lively discussion in these days about what wealth means for our society and how we can measure that wealth. So part of our wealth is our health. So it does not connect to economic terms. So of course we need a system that allows us to keep our health, that allows us for recovery if we get an illness like corona, but also others. But part of what we value now is very local, is connected to our neighborhood, and cannot be captured in these economic GDP terms, for example. If you homeschool your children, that's not part of a GDP. If you do shopping for your neighbor, there's a part of the GDP added, you do shopping, but the support to your neighbor is not covered by that. If you help others in such a situation, that's not covered. So part of what we believe as wealth in our society is not economic, and we increasingly see that. And as planners, we will have to care for ways to deal with weird situations coming up in the future, like the Netherlands start to talk about the 1.5 meter society as a potential new normal. And as a planner, I find it rather weird to think about a perspective where we plan public spaces as spaces of encounter, of community, of collective togetherness, of living in diversity in small neighborhoods, like also put forward by many post-growth activists, and at the same time keeping distance. So designing spaces where you meet but where you still keep distance. So that's a very weird situation, and that will be difficult to deal with for planners, I'm sure, for a longer time, how to manage that kind of balance and to think through how we will continue to live and plan in space. And again, that's not connected to economic terms and to wealth and GDP measures.
I would like to briefly add something, because there was this new publication from the Wuppertal Institute from, I think it was from publicated yesterday. And it said, and it, I think that's kind of the story. In 2008, during the financial crisis, we said system relevance is banking and financial institutes. When it comes down to the climate crisis, we always talk about the car industry when it comes down to system relevance. And now it's totally different. Now it's system relevant is public spaces, it's all public institutes, it's education, it's our health institutes, it's health goods. And the story has changed, like the narrative has changed, and also the narrative of wealth, I think, throughout the world as well. Like it's a perspective, it's a global perspective that comes all the way down through the neighborhoods, because I think our world is very unjust and there's so many problems, and they are very challenging. And now we always talk about Corona, but I think for now, like maybe we all kind of being treated very similar for the first time, like everyone, or like in so many places there is a lockdown, people have to stay at home, everywhere it has totally complete consequences. Like it's totally different situations in Africa or in India, and it's like I'm in my place with 100 square meters are quite lucky, a very lucky person. But when it comes, I think when we talk about wealth, and it's always been like it's scientifically, to me, it's scientifically proven that wealth doesn't go one in one with the GDP or with money that you have. Like it goes for a time, but then I think Tim Jackson has given a quite good agenda why from a certain point it's not going aligned anymore. And I think the story that we have now, and where we put focus on different things throughout the whole society, maybe we don't lose these words anymore, and this idea of what's really, really necessary when it comes all the way down to being healthy and being happy.
And to add to that, it might not be that easy to just get back to where we've been before. So the world might have changed, and our thinking might have changed in a way that just getting back to the ideas that we had so far of how to boost economic success, even in GDP terms, like putting people together in dense places, in great internationally connected places, in large cities. It's exactly the places that we, some of us even fear today, to meet with different foreign people, to get new ideas. So the density that creates creativity now becomes suspicious. And I think we have to work through that from any perspective. And that's a good starting point then to think through, where do we actually want to go then? So there is no simple way of getting back. We can think in different directions. And one of those is post-growth in very radical terms. Others are more moderate, but it's not deciding against getting back to normal, because getting back to the normal that we knew until last year is not like switching a button and then we are back. Even 1 or 2 months of lockdown are too long to just switch that button. So we will have to make some adjustments.
I think you have mentioned some examples of post-growth planning, places, and some of the ideas. If we are thinking that, you know, if we can't go back to normal, how would we then imagine a kind of idealized post-growth city? What kind of features does it have? How could it provide a vision to take us out of the COVID situation? What kind of things happen? What kind of practices? What kind of policies would we see in this city?
Yeah, so I think what we can also learn from now, which is what is really important and also goes along with the post-growth ideas, is to relocalize consumption and production, like to go more into the regions and really like take what's there and connect what's there. And this is, I think, one important thing. The other important thing is to look on our patterns of mobility. Like there are cities right now which close down streets to give way to pedestrians and cyclists. Like I live in Dortmund, and it's very hard to keep to get this physical distance between you and another person that you meet on the pedestrian or sidewalk, and you mainly have to walk on the street with some other cars. And I think we can like give more way to the alternative mobilities and transportation modes, and do try a lot of new ways to move alternatively in the city. And then what you recognize now, it's not like you don't only have the enabling state for community initiatives. Like now you can kind of see a very leading state, but you also have a quite vivid community organization. So maybe we could think a bit more also in this direction, like how can we combine like a very strong state and state decisions, but also a very vivid community organization when it comes to to consumption, to production, to caring for elderly, for people that need help, but also for cultural events and cultural economy and the local urban production and economy. So I think this is what we have to do now anyways, because that's the only way how we can go through this crisis. But also some things are very helpful to discuss it. Don't lose way, and maybe keep some of this and even look back, reflect upon it, and think about how we can sustain a few things and further development and further develop it for a post-growth city.
Yeah, also for me, it's rather difficult to imagine the one post-growth city. Actually, I would say that counteracts the ideal ways of thinking about post-growth to have the one-fits-all model. I guess the diversity in society can only mean that there will be a diversity of post-growth cities with rather different expressions in spatial terms and in ways how they organize. What we definitely need to do is to cut off some extremes of past years, like over tourism, many of the short distance flights. Maybe we just do not need that. But we also have to avoid getting back to the very local, to erect new borders. So we are a European, we are a global society that should care for the society and for the environment as a whole. So it's part of a combination to think through more circular aspects, circular economy, more circular modes of living at local scales, while still connecting in solidarity to global issues and to our global society. So I'm pretty sure it can only be successful if we find a good way to combine both. So not to retreat to our very small, narrow spaces, our neighborhoods, but to stay connected, to work on a different balance using maybe more digital tools, but maybe also slower travel, other means of enjoying our surroundings, but still keep an eye for our connectedness, and in any place, keep an eye for the disadvantaged. Like if we stay at home, that's a very good position to not to look at homeless people, not to look at people sitting lonely at home, not at people who are functional or fully illiterate and just cannot read if we write something online, and some children who struggle to get their education, elderly people who struggle to be left behind. So that's important to keep that in mind, that today in Corona times, but especially afterwards, do not exclude these people, but actively search for them, actively look for them, and care for them.
Yeah, that was a great final word. Christian. Thank you also very much, Viola. I think we covered a lot of ground, and I feel I learned a lot about post-growth planning and what your endeavors are. So good luck with your future research and practice, and glad you took the time to talk to us.
Thanks to you for listening.
For more information, visit our website urbanpolitical.podigy.io.
Please subscribe and follow us on Twitter.